That's why we call you the Velvet Frog. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Sorry we haven't been around in a little while.
Yeah, somebody's been busy. Some of us have been, you know, not cutting off their fingers in the shop.
You get one guess as to who's been busy. Who's the busiest?
Do you know, so two things. One is I've decided to stop saying I'm busy. It's not that I'm not busy. It's just that who cares, right? It's like my friends know that I'm busy. Why do I need to bellyache about it all the time? It's like we should all have such problems. And I've chosen all the things around me. So it sounds like a complaint, and it's not. The trick is how to manage it. And if I can't manage it, then it's time to get less busy.
There's a book about time management that's like, you should never say you're busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I came to that on my own. And the other one I heard was a Buddhist that I had breakfast with recently said...
You had a Buddhist for breakfast?
We had a... They were delicious.
Baby Buddhists.
I said, make me one with everything.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we'll see you guys next week. This has been a great show.
No, she runs... She's part of the organization called I Be Me, Inward Bound, that is a youth mindfulness camp that one of my sons goes to. And it's a wonderful organization, and my son's gotten a lot out of it. And it's we were talking about it, and I said, yeah, I've decided to stop saying that I'm busy. And she said, somebody recently said that busyness is the violence of our times. Ooh. And I thought that is a really important way to look at it. Whether or not it's true for you, it is certainly easy to watch busyness have a violent effect on your life.
Well, it's about... It's an excuse to not make the time for the things that are actually really important instead of the garbage that we fill our life with every day.
Yeah. And so my method for dealing with the amount of stuff that I have is that I've actually started making the time at home really sacrosanct. Like, I don't pull out the computer to do any work after six, unless it's an absolute emergency. And that hasn't happened in weeks. I've been reading more novels. I've been taking more time, taking more baths, taking more quiet time, drive without the radio. It really is just like in every way we've talked about this.
Yeah, no, but it's like that part of the problem with the smartphone connected world is that you don't have the zero time that whether it was when you used to mow the lawn. Now I have a podcast on.
Well, can we link after this to that beautiful Louis C.K. Bit he does about using the phone for buying a phone for his daughter?
No. Yes, we can link to it. I've never heard it.
You've got to hear this because it's amazing. And he talks about the fact that, you know, you're sitting there and thinking, oh, the loneliness is coming on. I better drown it out with my phone.
It's like being in the elevator with other people.
It's a little serotonin machine. We all like them.
Right.
For a very specific
and soon they'll
reason.
Be on our wrists and they'll be like handcuffs for our attention.
No, it's going to be as soon as it's in the iris scanner, then we're all screwed because everyone's going to have wandering eye and you're wondering what they're surfing while you're talking to them.
That's when the lazy eye becomes a pro instead of a con on the evolutionary hierarchy.
Yeah, I can selectively make either of my eyes lazy. And it actually makes people stop talking to me and they don't know why.
That's good. That's a good trick.
You start to do that and they're like, they want to stop talking.
That's been a great show, guys.
You wish you had more time, but if only you were stuck in a reoccurring time loop.
Ah, well done, Norman.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, guys, did you see Edge of Tomorrow? Because I didn't.
Spoiler cast.
Yes, I saw Edge of Tomorrow the day it came out. I was in New York with my buddy David, and we had gone out to dinner for a lovely meal in this Japanese restaurant in the basement of an office building.
Oh.
It was like you went past a security desk and he didn't say anything, and then you made a left before the elevator, and downstairs was this fantastic Japanese, which is so Blade Runner.
So do you think the security guard has like a dining profile in his head of people that look like they're going to go rob the office building versus people who are going downstairs for Japanese food?
I'm so sure he didn't. But if he did, he's like a great and amazing actor.
It seems like a character, right?
Yeah.
So
Adam's seen it.
Yeah,
I saw it.
I've seen it.
But Will
has not seen it.
I accidentally read the book.
Now, how do you accidentally read a book?
Well, the book is called something else. The book is called All You Have to
All You Need Is Kill.
All You Need Is Kill,
which is such a much better title.
Oh. It was originally titled that too.
All You Need Is Kill is amazing.
Some marketing department was like, we need to. Nobody's gonna know this is science fiction if we don't put a good name on it. Let's call it Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow is such a non-name. You could call anything Edge of Tomorrow.
It's a very generic, but still descriptive name for the plot.
I mean, look, even the poster of Edge of Tomorrow is ridiculous.
It's very generic.
It's actually...
Well, it's all like, Tom Cruise movies.
But you know the fake... Actually, and Tom Cruise's Twitter profile I love. Running in movies since 1981. He does a lot of running in this movie. And the poster really looks like the end of The Player when they come up with that fake movie with Bruce Willis Julia Roberts.
Generic two people posing in armor behind a dramatically lit backdrop.
Yes. But let's talk about Edge of Tomorrow, the movie.
Okay.
We're going to spoil
That's
it.
That's fine. I feel like I understand the high points of the
neither
plot
of us have read the book or read the manga, so Will can fill in how it might differ from a source. This is a blacklist movie.
What do you mean a blacklist movie?
So it was on the blacklist of films that were not made in Hollywood.
Right? Like so best unproduced screenplays.
Best unproduced screenplays as rated by all the readers.
The screenplay has a lot going for it. There's some great characterizations. Bill Paxton is absolutely a scene stealer.
Can I guess? He is the grizzled sergeant of the squad who has survived more campaigns than anyone else except for...
Oh, no, he's the one that first meets Tom Cruise when he wakes up in the morning and he's like, you know, I'm going to send you to the squad.
Yeah.
So he's in command of all the squads.
And he monologues.
And he monologues constantly and so fun. I mean, you could just tell. I met Bill Paxton last year at Comic-Con and he's a sweetheart, but he talked about movie roles as like, I had so much fun on that one. And I mean, you could just tell he is absolutely having a blast. Every day he's showing up, he's having fun with these lines.
And Bill Paxton, just to be clear, Hicks
from Aliens.
No, not Hicks.
Hudson, sorry.
Hudson.
Jesus, we just
Aliens.
Had the whole conversation.
Hudson.
And Big Love, the most amazing show.
So this is his bookend to Hudson, where in Hudson he plays the kind of...
Game over, man.
Insubordinate.
Why don't you put her in charge? Yeah, send the android.
Here he plays the sergeant who yells at everyone else.
Yes.
Perfect.
I will say, I found Edge of Tomorrow enjoyable. It suffers no scrutiny whatsoever.
That's okay. It is a perfect
time travel movie.
Popcorn flick.
No, this is particularly egregious because it falls apart in the first moment that the movie's plot is kicked into action.
Wait, hold on. Because I can sci-fi apologetics this. Explain to me your nitpicking and I will explain it away within the logic of the movie.
Oh, this is an interesting
This is
challenge.
Norm's superpower.
Okay. So Tom Cruise sets in motion his ability to reset so the aliens that they're fighting have the ability to reset the day. So every time they lose, they can go back to the beginning of that day and figure out why they lost and undo that.
And in the book, they explain that as sending information back into time.
Right.
Not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So in the movie, it just wakes up and it's Groundhog Day every day. So Tom Cruise gets this ability when he kills a slightly higher up alien and it bleeds on him as he dies.
The bleeding didn't happen, but everything else.
And the bleeding gives him the ability to reset the day. Okay.
Yes.
So then he's able to reset the day and he goes through that day a few dozen times before finally meeting Emily Blunt and like working with her. And she says, meet me when you wake up. And she starts to fill him in on this power he has.
Is this on the first meeting?
No. Oh, okay. It's multiple meetings over and over again. So she starts to fill him in on the power he has and says she no longer has the power. She had it in Verdun where she like destroyed a bunch of aliens, but she no longer has it because of some blood transfusion or something. So my question is, take her back to the goddamn big alien that gave him the power and give it to her.
He's not that smart.
Well, no, it doesn't.
But it was the first place he went.
I got this one, Norm.
Okay. All right.
Once the blood of the alien hits him, he's locked in until the criteria that he has to fulfill to get out of the loop end. He's in the loop.
There are two lines of dialogue that solve this, where he says he doesn't want the power. Why can't he just blood transfuse it back to her?
Yeah.
And she says they've tried everything.
Hold on. Does the movie end with him killing her?
No.
Oh, because the book... by the way, spoiler in the book too.
Okay, well, we'll get to the ending, and yeah, that's a point. A weakness.
She's
of the
tried
movie.
Everything except that. So you think that the loop is specific to one entity
it's per back battle? To the future, right? So once he goes back in time, then that loop branches off and it's a different loop, and he keeps using the same loop until they close the okay. loop.
Yeah. Okay. So he can't.
Don't think about it too hard.
He can't give the power to her. And two, it wouldn't matter if they went back to the alien to bleed on her.
Okay. I want to talk about something you said a couple days ago when we were talking about doing this podcast, which is you said Emily Blunt apparently had a little bit of a difficult time on this movie. Yeah. And I wanted to hear about that because I love her and I don't want to think about her having a difficult time.
So it's directed by Doug Liman, who directed Swingers, Born Identity, Mr.
Who's an amazing
Smith,
director. Doug great Liman's director. Brilliant.
Has some
he
hits
has
and
directed a dud or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example,
Smith.
I like that movie. It is a bad movie, but it is a likable bad movie.
It's very likable. It is very likable. Vince Vaughn yelling at his mom, and Brad and Angelina are just, I mean, they're compelling no matter what, but the movie is plot-wise light as a feather.
Couldn't agree more.
I love Emily Blunt. I think she is wonderful. She's very versatile. I thought that she was originally supposed to be cast as the Black Widow in Iron Man 2 before Scarlett Johansson. And it was a fan favorite where, and can you imagine Emily Blunt with her, like, she has that great stare.
Yeah.
Like, she has...
The Devil Wears Prada stare.
I'm not going to say resting bitch face, but, like, she has
She does have bitchy resting face. Totally.
She can grimace. And
resting
she can
bitch face, Norm?
That's a thing.
No, bitchy resting face.
Sure.
It means something completely different the other way around.
Resting bitch face.
Yeah.
Well, the dog is sleeping.
One's a meme and the other is something you don't ever want to say to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
And anyway, she could not do Iron Man 2.
Because?
Because she was committed to that Gulliver's tale.
The one with
Gulliver's
Jack Black?
Gulliver's Travels.
Oh.
That terrible Jason Segel, Jack Black movie. Also, she didn't want to do action. She didn't want to be stuck into a movie franchise. Her mistake. Scarlett Johansson's great.
Well, actually, I think Scarlett Johansson's great. And, I mean, she doesn't do much in Iron Man 2, but Scarlett Johansson's fantastic.
In the new Soldier. Captain America,
And wonderful. She does some really great, complicated,
good in Avengers
excellent
too, for
acting.
My point being that she had not done a big action movie like this before.
Right.
Up in this.
Well, and she said like 10 years ago in an interview,
she did.
If I ever do an action movie with Tom Cruise, just shoot me or something.
She
like
said,
that.
I would rather do like terrible theater or something, have a terrible career than be a spear holder in a Tom Cruise action movie. And then someone called her out on that. She says, oh, at least I was holding a sword, not a spear in this one.
Oh, it's a sword? Well, it's not even an axe?
It's actually a helicopter blade.
Fuck. They ruined the goddamn book.
She has a giant sword.
Yeah, but it's a helicopter blade.
Okay. Oh, yes. That's how they made it. Oh, man, I didn't even notice that. That's great. That is great.
But wait a second. I want to also talk about a little bit about the Trinity problem, which is they spend all this time setting up this female character who's amazing and super badass in Emily Blunt, just like Carrie Ann Moss's Trinity, only to have her arrive and hand off all the badassery to the male hero of the film for the rest of the movie, requiring rescue repeatedly.
She doesn't require the rescue.
They make her a damsel in the movie?
She's not a damsel. Not at all.
She's not a damsel at all, but...
So in the book, the battle bits go back and forth between them constantly. Like they're both back to back against hordes of the mimics, right? Are they called mimics in the movie?
Yes, it's mostly him doing the problem solving.
You see his journey. But to go back to your point about her having a problem with the shooting, Doug Liman's shooting style is very guerrilla. The beach scene, they had to scrap a full day of shooting and talk about expenses, right?
Wow.
And
why would they have to scrap a full day of shooting?
Because he wanted to shoot differently the second day.
Wow.
And so adding on a production, they built that whole beachfront, they released it on the anniversary of D-Day, first of all, and had it, you know.
Classy.
And there was a storming the beaches of Normandy in the movie. There was an anecdote where he was just yelling at her and she couldn't handle it because, I mean, he was yelling at everyone.
Nobody likes getting yelled at.
She had just never made a movie like that before.
I don't like getting yelled at.
Yeah.
No, I've spent my entire life avoiding getting yelled at.
Have you ever, actually, my friend Paul F. Tompkins talks about, he has a whole routine talking about that. It was like, he tells this wonderful long story about being at a table read for a Paul Thomas Anderson film and getting to this house and looking at it and thinking, that looks like a house that someone would yell at me in.
Wow.
I know exactly how he feels.
Yeah, why would you walk into that door?
So they set her up as the big badass.
Right.
They have like, she's the war hero, the war angel. And it's explained why that is because she had that power before Tom Cruise.
Well, but the point... sorry,
to learn all those abilities.
Yeah.
To your point that she doesn't get to show off those abilities, I think there are some montage scenes. I don't think she needs to be rescued so much as without that power, she's just a normal grunt.
But that's problematic, right? It is slightly problematic. I recognize one can talk their way out of that, but I also, you know, it is a classic Hollywood thing
to not make them equals.
What's on film, right? That's where you get end up.
Exactly.
I mean, the book is really explicit. Like, there's no special powers. You go back in time, but the power all comes from dying and living and dying and living.
Right.
In his case, like 270 times. In her case, 212.
Right.
Something like that.
Thousands.
Did you ever see that thing that Harold Ramis said about how many times Bill Murray repeated Groundhog
Day? At least 10 years?
Yeah.
Maybe more like 25?
Yeah. Which you get that sense in this movie, because
they definitely do a good job at allowing you to feel like the resets are happening much more rapidly than you're seeing,
and that he's gone through trial and error hundreds of times.
Yes,
and they do a good job not saying, "Oh, how long we've been stuck in this loop," and no dramatic, "I've been stuck here for."
Does he not write the number on his hand?
No.
Oh, in the book, he writes the number. First thing he does in the morning every time is write the number on his hand.
Oh, nice. I will tell you that I think Tom Cruise was making an in joke about Tom Cruise. When he is doing the push-ups and rolls out of the way to get behind the truck and gets run over that first time, you hear him go, "Son of a bitch!" Which is like, Tom Cruise says that in so many movies. And with that high-pitched "bitch" at the end, I can't do it quite that high-pitched. I believe, I appreciate in his older years that Tom Cruise could still open a movie and yet make fun of the arc of his career.
He has to be like, movies have become self-aware in the time that he's been making movies.
Yes.
Like, thanks, Joss.
So the movie, one of the successes is the editing, because they don't tell you how many times he's done it.
Right.
It is a Groundhog Day-esque movie where things have to be repeated, like Bill Paxton's monologue, certain scenes, but in the writing and the editing, it doesn't feel as repetitive as it could be.
Do they actually repeat, like, are they reshooting each day? Or is it that they just reuse the Paxton monologue?
They do a very good job at letting you know you're seeing the same day again without ever letting you be bored at seeing the same scene again.
Like, the book was, like, one of the things I love. So I love kind of, like, I don't know enough about where this book falls in Japanese fiction, but I kind of assume it's in the same place as, like, the Battle Royale novel, which, if you've never read and you've only seen the movie, is a fascinating exercise in how do you make a kind of shitty movie off of an amazing book.
Right. Interesting.
And it's kind of like, you know, kind of pop fiction is what I assume. It's not something it's not like Murakami where, you know, you're just reading this and you're feeling enlightened. This is just a trashy action novel.
Well, I think that I also think the film does well with the twist.
At the end.
With the twist, not at the very end, but the twist when he thinks he's gotten to them and he hasn't, because they've actually been tricking him.
Okay, this is a spoiler cast.
Yeah, it is a spoiler cast.
What's the twist?
The twist is that he finally gets to where he thinks the Omega is, and it's not there, and it turns out that the aliens are already hyped to his ability to reset the day, and they're trying to trick him.
Oh, the whole thing's a trap just to draw him out.
They're trying to get him to where he thinks the Omega is, and then they're going to keep him alive.
And
so that they screw his ability to reset the day.
Yeah. And they're going to go, yes.
So he has to die to reset the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Which is that's not in the book.
And the stakes building at the end.
It never comes up.
He does get the power taken from him. So he has one last chance to make it all work. Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that definitely raised the stakes.
Totally.
I get the feeling, and this isn't being confirmed, that they changed the ending.
They absolutely. In the movie.
In the movie.
What was the ending in the book?
The ending in the book is she realizes that she's outside of his loop, right?
Yeah.
She lives. So she meets him every day for the first time,
right?
Like 50 first dates or Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And she realizes when she finds out that he's stuck in the time loop, because she's also of the time traveling kind of person.
Yeah.
All the antennas, she discovers the order of operations for getting outside of the loop. And it involves doing this and then killing all these antenna monsters, mimics. They all look exactly the same in the book because it's a book. And then you have to kill the main mimic. And then you have to kill all the rest of them because any one of them can carry it on. So they go through this whole process where they do it all in the right order. They kill all the mimics. And then he dies, wakes up, goes to sleep, whatever. The day ends with no explanation. And then he wakes up and does it again. Sonny and Cher playing the next morning. So when he comes and tells her this the next day, she realizes, even though it's her first pass through the loop again, and she's like, so they go have a nice day, they go on a date, whatever, you know, sexy bits happen.
Yeah.
And then she, at the end of the battle, or as the battle's wrapping up, once they've done the main part, she's like, okay, it's on, we're fighting. And they fight for an extended period of time through the massive base, causing massive amounts of destruction.
Why?
Because she and he are both are the two last antennas. Oh. So you have to kill all the antennas, and each of them are an antenna. So only one antenna can survive, and that's the person who gets out of the loop.
Oh, wow. Very
it's
Blade Runner.
It's fucking great. It is a great ending. And Norm that's came intense. In and was talking about how the ending was lame. Like, it was the most Hollywood of Hollywood endings,
oh,
right?
The ending
like,
is the two hilariously Hollywood.
Yeah. Right. And the ending has the biggest plot hole in the movie, where when he dies at the end of the movie, the conceit where he gets the Omega's blood,
yeah.
and somehow he's jumped, not to the last time, to the
so
base.
So my guess was that that was the ending, and then they're like, let's have him meet
or,
the girl
or,
again.
Or my guess, right, or my guess is that, you know, she dies, some sacrifice is made.
Right.
And she has to die.
Right, right, right.
So hold on, it's unclear what happens at the end?
No. What happens at the end is he saves the day. The Omega's blood injects him, and the day resets, and now the war is over.
Yeah.
And he goes to see her, and she's like, what do you want? And he's like, and then they cut to credits.
That is fucking terrible.
Oh, I know.
He does a Tom Cruise smile.
It is a big white smile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I mean, this book had a good ending.
Complicated endings are easier to achieve in books, I guess.
I really like the alien creature design and the animation.
What do they look like?
They,
like frogs? Would you describe it as a squishy frog?
You know how Keanu looks when his mouth is sealed in The Matrix and he tries to open it? Now picture his face looks sort of like a gargoyle, and it's white, and he's got tentacles and stuff, and it's almost like there's like heat haze distortion in front of his face, and he's blowing blue smoke out of his mouth. Sort of like that.
And then also moving really fast.
Oh, also moving very fast.
So is it
with like millions of tentacles. It's
And can they shoot things that like take
pseudopods,
people's heads off and all that
pseudopods.
Stuff?
Pseudopods.
Is this a situation where it takes hundreds of dozens of good guys, humans,
to kill
a single one?
No, they show many situations in which one soldier can kill one mimic,
but they're
wearing these exosuits.
Yeah.
That
they have to have the exosuits, yeah.
Right, and
the exosuit stuff was great. I love the movie was surprisingly funny.
There was a lot that's
of
very funny.
Good humor.
As they keep on dying, as they're trying to pick their way through the thing, it's very entertaining how many times they get flummoxed just by missing one little thing. Like and there's
are they,
point, they're literally like dodging as like bullets fly by their heads and ducking as like things swoop over them. It's very funny.
Well, so in the book, he makes the protagonist is basically in this one, as I understand it, he's a like general or something, a major that gets sent back to the lines.
Yes,
because he's an asshole.
He's
or
a
something.
PR guy.
Okay.
So that's actually, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say in the book, he starts out as like new recruit night before his first battle.
Oh.
And he's like, this is like a video game. I just keep going out and dying over and over again. I get better every day.
Well, so yeah, I'll tell you something is the opening of the movie, the first 10 minutes is the worst part of the movie. I turned to my friend David and I was like, I don't know who I'm supposed to give a shit about in this movie yet because nobody...
Tom Cruise is unlikable. He's a coward, but I think it's a meta awareness.
He's not even interestingly not likable. It feels like, well, this is the best we can do with this, but we don't want to make him too unlikable because we want you to like him later. And it felt a little, look, it always feels a little bit disingenuous to be picking apart a movie like this from the outside. These are hundreds of millions of dollars spent on some of the most expensive humans on the planet to make a gargantuan circus of a film. So all sorts of shit can go wrong. But you got to get the audience in the first 5 minutes or you don't have a movie.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
There's a reason the cold open exists.
Yes. And the cold open in this movie just doesn't capture you to want to know what is going to happen to these characters. I'm really excited.
Adam, don't worry. They focus tested it enough to know that that was the best possible. You know, they did one where they showed the end of the movie. They did one where they showed a battle sequence from the middle where something funny happens.
Yeah,
they did one where he kisses the girl. You know, that was the best one. You saw it.
They did
scientifically
the
determined. Yeah.
I'm sure they did a voiceover.
You know, I really appreciate David Cronenberg said he loves audience testing. And the interviewer was like, serious. And he was like, well, who the who the hell am I making movies for? I want to know what the audience wants out of a movie. And I appreciate that. Now, I mean, that being said, he still makes difficult movies that are intense, but he likes the process of getting that feedback.
So, like this movie reviewed really well. It performed very poorly.
Very poorly.
Oh, it did perform poorly?
Yeah. Both Oblivion, which is the last Tom Cruise science fiction action movie, and this movie.
I would say I thought Oblivion was better.
I think stylistically, Oblivion
was beautiful.
Just so beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And ripe for prop making and ripe for...
Oh, yeah. Gorgeous and stuff. Really well
and
done.
Sound design. Mm-hmm. Oblivion, an amazing sound design.
Really good robots.
Story any good?
Yeah, derivative.
It's all right.
But
actually, I also... There's a new kind of starlet coming out over the past few years, and it's the girl in Oblivion is absolutely beautiful, but not in that sort of perfect porcelain Nicole Kidman mold, but more in sort of like the Shailene Woodley mold.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is like, I mean,
it's so funny you mentioned Shailene Woodley because it was her movie that destroyed Tom Cruise's The Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, it was. The Fault in Our Stars
opened the same day as Edge of Tomorrow and did double.
Wow. And that movie cost like $50 to make or something.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, man.
Is it a Nicholas Sparks book?
No, it's the John Green book.
Oh, okay. YA.
But anyway, I think the girl in Oblivion was fantastic and really lovely.
You know, she's a Bond girl.
Is she? Oh, the new one. She's the new Bond girl?
No. She was in the bad Bond movie.
Quantum Solace?
Quantum of Solace.
She was the one who died in the hammock. Spoilers for that, too, by the way.
No.
Oh, she was the other girl?
The one who died in the hammock was the Prince of Persia girl.
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Oh,
Norm.
Yes. No, I know who you mean.
It's Olga.
Olga Karlyeva.
Yes. She's Russian.
Yes.
She was in Quantum of Solace as the one who gets the vengeance.
Yes.
She is the female lead in Oblivion. Unless you're talking about... the other female lead.
Oh, I'm talking about the one up in the house.
Okay.
Are you an effective team? Okay. That's the one I'm talking about. So, not the Summer Glau impersonator.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. We're making all sorts of friends today, guys.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Yes.
That's one of my favorite lines in Big Bang Theory is when Kuthar Pali meets Summer Glau on the train and his opening line is, "It's hot in here. It must be summer."
Oh, boy. Jesus.
That is a hell of a line.
How do you...
The actress
I'm
you're
so
talking
glad
about,
I'm not a woman.
What's that?
Andrea something is her name. From Oblivion. She is fantastic.
She is fantastic.
Fantastic. And I totally get what you mean with the mold.
I mean, I'm quite sure that if you met any of these people in person, you'd be like, oh my God, I just can't even look at them. Like the light shining from their face is just blinding me. I mean, you know, these are not human
you're
people.
You're saying they're attractive people.
What's that?
You're saying they're attractive people.
Yeah, but I mean, if you've ever met like a movie star in real life, like they're usually twice as attractive in person. I mean, it's like, look, I met Rick Santorum and he's handsome.
Look, I've met directors who are twice as attractive as you expect them to be, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
Like they're all more attractive people.
Charisma is real and it's terrifying. Right.
Len Wiseman apparently smells really nice.
What's that?
Len Wiseman apparently smells really nice.
Did you read, there was a beautiful blog post from Jennifer Lawrence's best friend who was her date last year
at
the Oscars.
It was a fantastic post.
Talked about meeting Brad and Angie. And she said at one point, after hanging out for a while, she turned to Brad Pitt and she was just like, "Mel, now that we're buds," she was like, "What is the cologne you're wearing? Because it smells incredible." And he's like, I don't use soap and I don't use cologne. I don't use anything. And she's like, in the blog post, she's like, "Seriously, Brad, whatever you've got, bottle it because the whole world wants to smell it."
Oh, boy.
You de Pitt.
Yeah, oh, de Pitt. Nice. Well done, Will.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody.
It was a good show this week. So Edge of Tomorrow, like, I'm just bummed when a science fiction movie that reviews well, seems like it's pretty well thought out, maybe a couple of holes, comes out and it doesn't do well in movie theaters. I get a little bummed out because we had a long stretch there where nobody made big budget science fiction movies because they bombed.
Yeah.
And
it would be a shame if this was part of the same trend.
Yeah.
But maybe they should make smarter ones.
When was the last good science fiction movie?
I will say that hiring the Looper director to direct Star Wars 7 and 8... Well, Star Wars 8 and 9, brilliant.
The elephant in the room.
Yes.
Wow, Ryan Johnson.
How did I miss that?
Rian Johnson rewarded for directing Looper by directing Star Wars 8 and 9.
That's
and
fantastic.
Writing.
Isn't
and
that
writing,
great?
Yeah, and writing brilliant. It.
And again, Looper is another film that survives no scrutiny of its time travel whatsoever, yeah, but he really
defend,
enjoyable.
He would defend that.
He has defended it. That commentary is worth listening to if you have.
Okay. Yeah. I will watch
it's
it.
It's good.
I mean, look, I'm not saying I don't love that film. I love it. It's beautiful.
Brick was better.
I love Brick.
Brick is so well. Love Brick. Brick is square in your alley, though.
Brick is totally my alley. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
100%. It's so good.
I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah, I think that's it. Thank you guys so much. We'll be back next week. Actually, we may not.
Well, hopefully we'll be back next week.
We're going to try
and make the time.
Right now, schedule's a little tough.
Maybe we'll have to do it on Saturday or something.
We'll figure something out. but we'll definitely be back around Comic-Con, if not sooner.
Oh, yes.
And as always, like us on iTunes, YouTube. Give us reviews, feedback. We love feedback, comments, whatever.
We love you.
We'll see you guys later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.